Welcome to the IBCLC Mentor Podcast, where real-world lactation cases and theoretical scenarios come to life. I'm Margaret Salty, your host, and a dedicated IBCLC with passion for guiding the next generation of lactation consultants. Whether you're a student or new to the field, this podcast is designed to equip you with the knowledge and confidence you need to excel in your practice. Welcome to the IBCLC Mentor Podcast. I'm Margaret Salty, your host, and today I'm thrilled to welcome Melissa Cole, a board-certified lactation consultant, clinical herbalist, and author. We'll be diving into her latest book, Herbal Handbook for Perinatal and Pediatric Wellness. Melissa brings a wealth of knowledge on integrating herbal care into perinatal and pediatric health. And in this conversation, she shares her insights on how lactation consultants and other healthcare providers can incorporate these practices into supporting families. Whether you're curious about herbal remedies or looking for practical tools to expand your care, this episode is packed with valuable information. So let's dive in. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the sheer volume of information for the IBCLC exam? Unsure of how to tackle those tricky questions or picture-based scenarios? I get it. Studying for the IBCLC exam can feel like an uphill battle. But what if I told you there's a proven way to simplify your prep and walk into exam day with total confidence? My IBCLC exam mastery course is designed to take the stress out of exam prep. It's packed with strategies, insights, and resources to help you master the material, and I personally guarantee your success. Here's the best part. 100% of the students who've completed my course have passed the IBCLC exam. That's right, every single one. And if you don't pass, I'll give you your money back. That's how confident I am in this course. My course isn't just about memorizing facts. It's about understanding the why behind the questions, spotting the keywords, and mastering the perspective you need to ace even the toughest scenarios. Stop guessing yourself and let me help you simplify your prep, boost your confidence, and achieve your dream of becoming an IBCLC. Join the IBCLC Exam Mastery course today. Guaranteed success or your money back. Your future as an IBCLC starts here. Welcome, Melissa. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for the warm welcome. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm really pumped to talk all about your career and your new book. I think this is going to be a really amazing resource for all of my listeners and everybody in the lactation field. So I'm pumped to get into that. But let's first start with, where are you located and what kind of work are you doing?
Absolutely. I'm in Portland, Oregon. It's about 3 hours south of Seattle, and I've been here for about 20 years. Before that, I was in Northern California area and Bay Area, but Portland feels like home. And gosh, my private practice it's a little over 16, 17 years old. Before that, I was at a county health department for about 4 or 5 years and I have had different work hats on. So I'm primarily based out of Portland, Oregon in my little clinic. And apart from that, I do a lot of teaching and speaking. So sometimes I'm on the road for work, which is also a lot of fun, meeting people all over.
That's awesome. So we all come to the field of lactation via different routes, but we have a thread that kind of unites us all, and it's usually related to our experience. So what was it that brought you to this field?
Absolutely. Same thread. So prior to having my own kids, my children are now 22, 19, and 16. But prior to having them, I lived and worked and studied in Japan. I thought my whole life was going to be linguistics and cultural arts. And then lo and behold, I found out I really enjoyed the sciencey clinical side of birth and breastfeeding practices and got my feet wet, like probably like a lot of people in volunteer parent-to-parent support groups and different avenues. But really before my own kids, I had no interest in health sciences or babies. And it turns out I really have found a passion from their experience.
So tell me all about the book. Where did it come from? What is your background with herbs? And yeah, give me the story with the book.
Yeah, so my entry to herbs is definitely way earlier in my lifespan than anything lactation. I've been interested in herbs and plants since childhood. So that really my experience with herbal medicine, it precedes my love of lactation and infant feeding. But Cliff Notes version is I did have a little bit of a hippy dippy childhood at times, and so was around plants and gardens, and that was kind of in my wheelhouse. But later teen, young adult years, I was a big migraine sufferer, and I still can be prone to headaches, but Western medicine was really failing me. All of the medications, neurology appointments, whatever, I just wasn't getting relief. And I remember kind of walking into a bookstore in Berkeley where I was living. I was maybe 19, 20, and I just picked up some big book. I'm sure I couldn't afford it at the time, but I bought it, and it was me looking for my own relief and kind of looking at some herbal alternatives and finding relief, and actually, you know, some lifestyle changes in herbal medicine. Was really, that was my first intro into like, wow, this is really what I find to be supportive for my own well-being. And so it was more of a practice for myself and my family. But I think through the last few decades, it's dovetailed so well with supporting families, right? And we can talk more about that. So the book has been a part of my work in the last few years and kind of creating an herbal database and trying to get more evidence sort of published and in a format people can really use in their own practice. But that's sort of, you know, how my entryway into herbs really actually predates my lactation work.
Did you do any kind of special training apart from just your own interest? Do you have any herbal certification or anything like that?
Yeah, and just like lactation, there are many pathways and entry ways into the world of herbal medicine, and many types of practitioners and different styles of herbal medicine around the world and regionally. And so I have had many teachers and mentors and many courses and conferences through the years. But actually my master's degree, my graduate degree is in therapeutic herbalism. So I've had a meandering approach and many different teachers, but I also do have formal education and a master's degree in therapeutic herbalism.
Yeah, that's awesome. So who is the primary audience for this book? I love the way that it's set up. I love the color coding. I think probably my favorite part are the monographs where you actually cite the evidence for the use of these herbs. I think this is a really amazing resource, but tell me, when you wrote this, who did you write it for?
Absolutely. So my primary lens was that for like clinicians, lactation consultants, people that a patient might say like, hey, can I take this herb safely in pregnancy or during lactation? And they needed a quality evidence-based resource to turn to for herbs. However, I also feel like it's just as appropriate for parents and people that want to have their own reference book on their bookshelf, right? So they can be empowered to know, you know, gosh, here, this is the point I'm at in my lifespan. Is this safe for me, my individual health history? So I think, honestly, individuals and clinicians can benefit from this resource. It's not so technical that, you know, layperson or individual is going to feel lost in it, but it's comprehensive enough, a step up for individuals and clinicians. And I think one of the things when we're looking at pharmaceutical-based resources, say we're going to look up a medication. Can a patient take this during lactation? What do we know? What do we not know? We have a lot of medicine resources, pharmaceutical resources, but when we look up the herbs that are included in a lot of the pharma resources, it's not the herbal evidence. You'll still see things like, well, don't take while you're lactating or pregnant because we just don't know enough. And I often find we really need some herbal specific resources if we're looking at herbs and not just from a pharmaceutical resource.
I think what's dramatically different about yours is that it's really accessible. The format and the styling and the size even, I mean, this is not a big book, makes it accessible and not overwhelming, which I think is really great. So I want to dive in a little bit more about the evidence, because we, in the field of lactation, we tend to be more crunchy And we tend to have patients that are more crunchy and usually want to try to stay away from the pharmaceuticals and want to use herbal remedies, whether it's for a galactagogue or for other things. And the thing that we always end up having to say is we don't really have much evidence. So tell me your perspective and where we get this evidence that tells us about the safety and the efficacy and just the uses for these herbs.
Yeah. And I'm a big stickler for, you know, evidence and citing, you know, references. So, I mean, I don't know, there's probably no less than a 10-15 page bibliography of research in here. So if you want to go to the primary article, you can. But two things, you know, we also don't have a robust amount of evidence for a lot of medications and lactation, because doing research at this time where we have a vulnerable population is not very ethical. And so we have to look at study design method, you know, how can we do the study to get some of the information we need without compromising a vulnerable population. And I do conduct primary research, and to get IRB approval for, you know, a particular randomized controlled trial, you need to be mindful and safe. And we can't always have large sample sizes or different things depending on the study design and, you know, what we're trying to answer. But we take what we know, and when we're talking about herbs, but also much like medications, we're often looking at, well, what do we know in a non-pregnant or lactating population? Like, do we have any just general safety concerns? All right, then we build from there. What do we know from animal studies? Are we seeing any toxicity issues? Are we seeing fetal malformation issues in animals? And then we build from like the animal research. And in terms of, you know, human-based resources, you know, we're often finding, you know, case studies or different clinical trials that have been done, but not all of them are done in pregnancy or lactation, right? It just wouldn't be ethical. So we do have to take the best available information and evidence that we have and hypothesize, you know, could there be a potential harm to a developing fetus in pregnancy or to, you know, human infant through milk? We don't always know relative infant dose of herbs and milk. So we have to take the information we do know. And if we have potential concern, particularly for a non-lactating population, that concern is going to be heightened in pregnancy or lactation. But a lot of herbs, like, let's say like chamomile, for example, while we might not have 59 different studies on a pregnant population or a lactating population, we can look at the general population either. There aren't many concerns. There's some outliers or allergies or different things where we would be concerned. But in general, this herb has a pretty good safety profile. So when we're looking at the evidence, we're kind of cultivating, well, what do we know? Do we have any specific breastfeeding or pregnancy specific studies? But we're extrapolating what we know to the best of our ability. Sorry, that was quite wordy.
No, that was great. I think that's a great explanation. That totally makes sense that we, and really, even when we're not looking at pregnant and lactating, historically, researchers don't study women.
Yeah, very true.
So yeah, it's difficult to even get studies of drugs made for women in a woman.
Completely agree.
I love that in this book, you did provide a citation for everything that you put in here. Yeah.
The thing is, maybe not every single study is pregnancy or lactation specific, but it points to the available evidence, the most up-to-date available evidence we have, because at the end of the day, whether it's medication or an herb, our job is to give that individual enough information so ideally they can make an informed decision around what they're going to put in their body. You know, that's it.
I'm a Pathway 2 instructor. My platform, one of my soapboxes, is really to help students and IBCLCs to access, understand, and apply evidence in their practice. And then my other kind of soapbox is really to kind of help IBCLCs stay in their lane. I feel like because if you listen to some of my podcasts, you'll see a common theme here. I talked about it with Dr. Eglash. Historically, doctors don't know a whole lot about breastfeeding, and lactation consultants have kind of had to be everything for their patients. But on that note, I really want to make sure that my students and my listeners are really practicing within their scope. Absolutely. And if they're not an herbalist, if they're not a prescriber, it is outside of their scope to recommend or suggest any herbal remedies. So I want to understand from you, from your perspective, how do you recommend that lactation professionals use your resource within their scope?
Absolutely. So I'm with you. And actually, when I lecture, you know, provide presentations, you know, usually one of the first two slides of mine is on scope of practice. And really, if we go to our own ABLC guiding documents and our clinical competencies, it's not even our scope of practice, but it's our duty. We actually have a duty to provide information, evidence-based information around complementary alternative therapies, galactagogues. And so we need these tools to be able to provide information, especially that's highly evidence-based, because it is our duty to help families navigate what is helpful or harmful to their lactation experience. So rather than scope, I'd say it's actually your duty to know what resources you can pick up, thumb through, especially if someone's coming to you and saying, you know, can I take herb XYZ? And rather than saying like, I don't know, go ask your doctor, having resources like we would have medication in mother's milk, or we would have other handbooks, we're going to be able to look up and give them information so that they can be more informed. So that's one aspect of not only staying in scope, but fulfilling your clinical duties to provide information. And I do think it's different. You know, one thing to be mindful of, when we're talking about a medication that requires a prescriber and a prescription, and you have to go get it filled, that is a little bit of a different realm. These are over the counter, like anybody can order or go purchase, for better or worse. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but anybody can buy many of these things. We might find that somebody is already going to the store and saying, you know, I bought all these things, are they safe? So it's often not even the lactation person that's saying, hey, many parents have found that this helps or that helps, why don't you consider taking this or that for your issue? It's oftentimes the parent themselves that's saying like, can I take this? I bought it, can I take it? And so we do need to have those resources to be able to provide them with as quality information as possible.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great. That's a really great response to that. So what is your opinion and also professional perspective on the galactagogue blends that happen to be everywhere on the shelves at Target? And there's such an epidemic of quote unquote low supply. And I feel like this is really kind of setting moms up for disappointment at the very least. So what is your perspective on those blends? Are blends like that helpful, or are they kind of like throwing spaghetti at the wall and let's see what sticks?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, we all want to be good detectives and help a family figure out like what is the root cause of their milk production concerns, right? Is it perceived? Is it real? And if so, what is the root cause, right? Do we have some primary insufficiency concerns that are maybe more hormonal, anatomical, physiological, or do we have more secondary concerns where it's just more of a management issue? They have the anatomy, the physiology to lactate, but off to a poor start and things got compromised. So being able to figure out, you know, is it truly low supply? If so, why? Will help us target. Now, sometimes some of those blends, like you said, it's kind of like the kitchen sink. It's a little bit of everything. I much prefer a personalized approach. I much prefer figuring out what does this person's body need the most support around, and then targeting those direct issues. Now, the reality is a lot of times people are already going to buy them, right? They're heavily marketed. You know, people see TikTok videos and they think they need 5,000 ounces in the freezer. You know, there's so many reasons a parent may feel that their milk production is low or truly be dealing with low production. I prefer a personalized, you know, style, because there's some herbs for individuals that, you know, might not help them make milk or might have a paradoxical or like reverse response if it's not the right thing their body needs. So I'd say if they're trying something for a week and they're not actually seeing a benefit, it's probably not the right thing for them. So some of the blends, you know, I have two concerns. One, I don't always really know the therapeutic dose of each herb because it's proprietary, and they, you know, they'll tell you the total milligrams, but you don't know how much of each herb. And I feel like we should all know what's, you know, what we're putting in our body. So I much prefer ones where we know exactly how much of each herb is in there, and a personalized approach. So if someone's just trying to buy a blend and they don't feel it's working well for them, they may be best suited to maybe have a more individualized approach to see what their body needs help around.
So have you seen harm done by patients taking herbs on their own without kind of any guidance?
I mean, sure. I could definitely say through the years, I've seen people like inappropriately self-medicating or dosing themselves with something they think is beneficial when actually it's not maybe the best thing for them. I haven't had any cases of, you know, true harm. Most of the negative case studies with herbal medicine is that there can be, you know, preparations that maybe if they're not properly screened, like can have heavy metal contamination, other pathogens or different things can be in a blend if someone's not careful of their sourcing or where they're getting herbs. That's generally more it than someone actually like hurting themselves with the plant itself. So when you read cases where there's, you know, been an herb where there was some issue in the patient that took it, I often wonder, well, was it the herb itself or was it that it was poorly sourced or maybe contaminated in some other way? So it is important when someone comes in and they feel like they've been taking something and if they're not seeing any difference or change to let them know we might want to switch it up.
And is it true that the herbal, the supplements, that market is not regulated at all?
So, correct. Herbs and supplements, there's some regulation. It's different than, say, like what a pharmaceutical goes to go through market. That being said, it is good to look for quality products. I would be really mindful of getting some like off-brand supplement at the back of, you know, the dollar store that's dusty on the top and, you know, you have no idea what's in the bottle, you know, is this label accurate or not? So I do think going with like quality brands, sourcing is important. Going with companies where they've vetted out, this is what's in this bottle and, you know, here's what we attest to versus something unknown. Herbs are something where just you sometimes get what you pay for. Getting the cheapest thing online you can find doesn't necessarily mean it's the part of the plant you want. I'll give you one example with moringa. I've seen a lot of super cheap moringa online. And what I don't know, are they using the bark, the root? You know, we really want the leaf and we want to make sure that it's, you know, coming from reputable sources and hopefully ethical sources too. So people need to be aware that no, there's not necessarily a big overseeing agency screening every bottle that goes to the store, but we do want to work with companies who go the extra mile to screen and really vet their herbs in the process of manufacturing them. And I can always provide more resources on that if needed.
Yeah, that's great. Are there any companies making these herbal galactagogues for lactating women that you find are good quality and you recommend those brands?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any brand allegiance in terms of like a lactation specific line, but say in terms of like the herbal world, you know, one company I think does a very good job in just quality sourcing. They're very ethical. They really screen for lots of the, you know, things in the plant materials before they package or manufacture it. Mountain Rose Herbs out of Eugene, Oregon. Very high quality. They have bulk products and some that are pre-done. And they're not like a breastfeeding or lactation company, but they are just a quality herbal company. In terms of, you know, things that people can find, it's more over the counter in their communities or online. Some brands that go the extra mile, I think Gaia brand herbs does a good job. And even surprisingly, a lower cost, but I feel like they do a good job now. NOW is pretty widely available. And I think that they do a good job and people can find that in communities, even if there aren't like natural grocery stores. Let's see, Wise Women herbs. I mean, there's many different lines. Organic India does some good blends of like some Ayurvedic herbs. And even some of the companies in our own field, I don't necessarily have a problem with. I don't like it when the blend is proprietary and they're not listing ingredients. I'd like to know how many milligrams of each. But it's just good to know, you know, where your herbs are coming from, if possible, and reaching out to someone like myself that could connect you to like another clinician in your community or give you resources. I'm pretty accessible through lunalactation.com on different platforms.
Awesome. So if somebody wanted to use moringa and you said that you need to ideally use the leaves, would that be listed on the bottle? How would somebody know?
A good quality company will. It will say, you know, moringa and then usually in parentheses, you know, leaves and then say like, you know, 300 milligrams per serving or, you know, we'll definitely break it down. If they've gone through any like organic standard certification or whatever other certifications they have will be on the bottle. But you want to look for the plant part, the dose, how much. And that's something important, you know, when it's just like, and also the Latin, the scientific name, you want to know, like moringa can be called a lot of things, drumstick tree, like it can have a lot of common names, but you really want to make sure that the Latin name lines up with what you're looking for.
Interesting. So herbs come in lots of different formats. Most of the time, I think we're seeing capsules of dried herbs. Mm-hmm. So do you find that there is a difference in efficacy when somebody is to take a dried herb versus a tincture?
Great question. I mean, liquid forms often get into our bloodstream and our system a little bit faster. So sometimes you will find liquid in capsules or certainly like liquid drops that, you know, you can take almost like you would take cough syrup or something, like a little liquid tincture. But tinctures are primarily made from either the fresh or the dried plant. It's been extracted in usually like a type of grain alcohol, sometimes glycerin, sometimes apple cider vinegar, but it's been extracted so that the important constituents of the plant are now in the liquid. And the dried herbs, like a powder that you'd see in a capsule, is usually the bulk herb itself has been ground down into a powder and then put into a capsule. It can kind of be herb by herb. There's some herbs that I feel are best in their whole plant powder state, and then some herbs I think are best as a liquid. I work with a lot of liquids because I do think they get into the system. And I can also customize it. If somebody I'm working with needs 3 to 5 different things, I can blend them all into a liquid, and then they just take one dose versus taking 29 different capsules of that product.
And do you think that glycerin versus alcohol affects the efficacy or the dose or anything like that?
For some, it can. A lot of herbs cannot be extracted with glycerin. They have to be an alcohol-based extraction. But for vulnerable populations, so a lot of our pediatric blends or little tummy tonics or things like that are glycerin-extracted herbs to avoid alcohol. For individuals wanting to really completely avoid alcohol for whatever, personal preference, choice, health, then often, you know, we'll go with herbs available as a glyceride or bulk powder. But even with the herbal tincture, you know, you can evaporate the alcohol off if you put it in like hot water, hot tea. But different herbs will do best as different types of preparations. And sometimes you can't get everything extracted in glycerin like you can with alcohol.
Interesting. Okay. Back in my crunchy days, I used to buy bulk herbs and make tinctures and drink gallons of red raspberry leaf tea, but that feels like a lifetime ago.
You'll find just different like cycles and fads. So right now there's a lot of functional and adaptogenic like mushrooms, right? You know, so all of the mushroom coffees or mushroom supplements and products. So through different generations, I think different herbs get their moment in the sun. But in general, you know, still over 80% of our global population uses foods and herbs as some type of primary medicine. And so I think that it's really culturally appropriate for us to be mindful that many people around the globe are using herbs and plants as food and medicine, and we need to have resources available to give everyone the best available information possible.
Yeah, I love that. So when thinking about patients that you take care of, you mentioned earlier, we have to really understand the root cause. If this is primary lactation insufficiency, what is it? Because it could be that she has prolactin issues. It could be that she's not insulin sensitive. So how are you figuring that out? Are you working with a team or another provider to kind of test and figure these things out?
The herbal component aside, I mean, I kind of feel like that's the job of a lactation consultant, is to try to be the best detective possible. And, you know, obviously we're doing awesome health intakes and we're asking the right questions, or we're figuring out what questions matter. We're doing physical examinations, you know, when appropriate, and we're getting the best information we can with our eyes and our ears. Sometimes there's definitely a time and place for some lab work, or having, you know, a patient get some lab work to get a little more information. But the herbal piece just simply, I mean, I work with many patients who have no interest in herbs whatsoever. It's still my job to try to help them figure out what their body needs to make as much milk as possible. And then that's where I ask, are they interested in exploring any herbal options or not? They may or they may not be, but I think the due diligence of their lactation team to help them to the best of their ability try to figure out what the root cause or causes are and make a sustainable care plan moving forward.
That's great. So what advice do you have for a lactation consultant that's interested in sort of broadening their scope by learning and maybe even getting some kind of education or credential in herbal medicine? How do you recommend somebody go about that?
Sure. I mean, so if somebody is really interested in more the clinical side or the herbal practice, you know, it's like anything else you might be interested in learning or taking on, whether that's, you know, you want to incorporate body work in your practice or you want to do something else, herbal medicine is much the same. It's a deep study, much like lactation. It can be a lifelong study. So it is about going to those workshops, connecting with people like myself to tap into the herbal community, taking the classes, and just like also lactation certification, not expecting to like do it as fast as you possibly can. You know, I feel like everybody wants some letter after their name or certificate, and they want to do it, and they want it to take a week, and then they're done. You know, and that's just silly. Whether it's herbal studies, manual therapy, lactation, like these are deep fields. You know, we owe them our respect to take time to kind of learn. And if it's something that you more formally want to learn about, be prepared for it to be a study, just like anything else you'd want to know or do. And there's many styles of education, in-person, online program. There's lots of ways, just like with lactation education, to get that information. But it is kind of a study that, you know, you should take seriously, and it's a deep field.
Is there a registry, or is there some kind of hub for how to find people?
Sure. I mean, I think a couple of good ones, both American Herbalist Guild, American Botanical Council, have good educational resources, probably broken up by state, and probably like different teachers or different classes in the area. So American Herbalist Guild, American Botanical Council. I would say like pregnancy and lactation specific herbal stuff is even more of a niche. So if that's your jam, you know, you're welcome to reach out to me and I can email you some resources. But in terms of general education, American Herbalist Guild, American Botanical Council would be good sort of U.S. places to start. And if you're somewhere else in the globe, let me know. There are different organizations for different parts of the world. But I mean, those are two good websites to start with.
Do you have any advice for anybody that wants to pursue becoming an IBCLC?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously, I'd be very supportive and want to encourage them with their aspirations. But I think it's kind of like what I mentioned about herbal studies. Like, this is a deep field. And at the end of the day, you know, just getting that certification as fast as possible shouldn't be the end goal. We should feel like, you know, we have a solid foundation of knowledge. It's going to be a lifelong study because there's a lot to know as we're figuring out, well, what is happening on the parent side, the infant side. We do have to be really good detectives and be prepared, you know, to keep going with your education. You know, the certification is that entry level, like, all right, we've got the foundational experience, but then you keep learning. You just keep going and the learning doesn't stop. And so I think a lot of people want to rush to like, okay, I got this thing and now I can start to work and do this work. And it should be just kind of a lifetime pursuit of continuing to level up.
Well, this was amazing. I really am so grateful that you wrote this book and that you were able to chat with me about it. So I'm going to put links in the show notes for everybody to learn about you. But what is the best place for people to find you and reach out to you?
Luna Lactation. And then on all the socials, it's just Luna Lactation. I'm pretty darn accessible. So if you're looking for a resource, you need support, you need any clinical support for your own patients that want to incorporate herbs, reach out and I'll point you in the right direction.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Melissa.
Thank you, Margaret.
Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe, and check me out on social media at Margaret Salty.